You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. Good morning. Welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. I'm Tina Spindler, and I'm here with fellow Master Gardener Katrina Kirkaby, and we're here to chat about what to do in the garden in November. Katrina, can you believe it's November already?
I cannot believe it's November. It doesn't really feel like November.
We had a really warm and windy and very sad fire situation in October. So we probably today are going to have to talk a little bit about what we didn't get done in October.
Exactly. I don't know about you. I live in the foothills, so my garden was pretty well trashed in October.
And I am closer to the coast, but still in the coastal foothills, and it was just too hot and windy to do a lot of the cool season planting that I normally do in October. So we're going to talk about that for November, to do some of the things that we normally would have done in October into November, so that we can hurry up and get our gardens situated for the cool season before the craziness of the holidays starts.
Indeed. Where should we start, Tina?
Well, I think what we should perhaps do is talk about getting our gardens ready for all of the holiday events that are coming up, which to me means getting some of our flowers in, because we want our gardens to look nice when we have company for the holidays.
You know, I would like to back up a little bit on that.
Sure.
I'd like to talk about cleaning up our gardens.
Oh, there you go. Since the wind kind of majors a bit of a mess.
Oh, my goodness. Last week we were cutting, like, my bougainvilleas, not because of loppers, but because of the wind. I have no leaves left on my bougainvilleas.
Oh.
And my plants have, some of them, been so stripped. And I do a mild cutback usually this time of year, and then February I do a harder cutback. But because the plants were so abused, I did some of them. I had to do a really hard cutback, and we got to clean up before we start. Now, everybody might not have the wind I have. I live in one of the most windiest areas, but before we start planting, make sure you clean up.
Sure, and that's a great advice. No matter what time of the year you're doing a big replanting, you first want to do a walk through your garden and evaluate what's going on. And if you have some, you know, broken branches and, you know, lots of debris, you know, do indeed clean that up before you do some planting, because first of all, you know, it's going to get in your way if you don't. But with regard to making our gardens, you know, spruced up and nice looking, what we want to do after we do the cleanup is a couple of things. We talked about some of this last month, because October, if it isn't super hot and windy, is actually a great month to do a lot of new planting. So in November, before the holidays, you can continue, if you already started it, or start, if you didn't, planting pretty much anything that is not a tropical type of plant. So what I will be doing, now that it's November and I'm going to be hosting Thanksgiving, so I want to get the place looking nice, is first of all, I'm going to dig up and transplant some of the perennials that I have in places that have either gotten too big or if they've died out. Katrina was mentioning to me before we started the show that she has lost the Shasta daisies that she loves that originally came from my garden. So they've disappeared, huh?
They disappeared.
Yeah.
I don't know where they went. They're gone.
So what I will do, because I have some Shasta daisies that have gotten too big for the spots they're in, is I will dig up the clumps and I'll divide them, pot up some of them, give some to Katrina and perhaps other friends, or move them to other parts of my garden. So any perennials that are clumping, like Shasta daisies, daylilies, Dutch iris, Alstroemeria, all of those types of perennials, this is a great time of year to dig them up, divide them, and replant them elsewhere in your garden or share them with friends. So that's a great thing to do to start in your flower garden. And then the next thing to do that I like to do right before the holidays is to go buy some new color blooming plants.
Me too.
They just make your garden look awesome. And of course, this time of year, you can find plenty of chrysanthemums in the stores.
Chrysanthemums are so simple, and they're relatively inexpensive, and they make the fall feel like the fall. You buy the colors, and it's easy.
Super easy. And the other thing that maybe folks don't know, because they only buy them for the holiday and then they toss them out, is if you plant them in your garden, they are perennials. I've planted chrysanthemums in my garden 10 years ago that have grown and spread, and you know, now I dig them up because they're growing in places that I may not want them. But if you buy them in pots just to decorate your front doorstep, for instance, don't necessarily throw it out. If you've been watering that plant, even if the flowers are done, you can put that plant in your garden and you'll have it for many, many years.
And they come back the right time of the year. In the color, you might not want that color all the time, and they're not there a lot of the rest of the year. But at this time, mine are going off like crazy.
Yeah, and mine actually, you know, and I don't even remember what variety I got, but they bloom throughout the year. So I've been having some chrysanthemum color since the summer. So some of them bloom in the summer, then they, you know, die back, or the blooms need to be deadheaded, and if you deadhead them, then you get another, you know, season of color from them a couple months later. So chrysanthemums are great color for this time of year.
You know, I like going to like nurseries or big box stores, and you could put them around your entrance where you are, or you could stick some in a in your front garden as people are coming in. It has the right kind of color for the time of the year, and they're really simple and easy.
Absolutely. Some other cool season plants that you can choose that should be in bloom right now for the color would be calendulas. Those are one of my favorite. Those come in yellows, golds, and oranges. So those are great to add to flower beds or pots. And then I also like to get, not necessarily for the color, but to plant elsewhere in the garden, some of my favorites are stock that has a beautiful scent, and it comes in pinks and lavenders and whites. But if you can plant that, you know, next to a bedroom window, you know, where you might open your window in the evenings or the early morning or all night long, and you get that scent wafting into your bedroom of the stock, it's just pretty amazing. Oh. So do go ahead and plant a color, either perennials or annuals that are in season. You may see marigolds in the nursery still, and they're super tempting because they come in the oranges and yellows, which are, you know, great for this fall season. But if you do choose those, remember that they are actually a heat-loving annual, and so they'll be great for your holiday display, but they're going to poop out when the weather turns cold. So fine to plant them for decoration, but they're not going to be something that's going to last all winter for you.
It's not going to be
your
winter plant.
For the winter plants, stick to the stock. Some other ones are dianthus, delphinium, foxglove is great, Iceland poppy is great, any of the pansies. So those are the plants you're going to want to use for your all winter long color. And so one of the things I do is I get white, you know, like white pansies, and the white stock, if you can find it, because then for, say, the Christmas holidays, when you want to add maybe a little bit of red, you know, you can still leave the white in and maybe just pop in a few, you know, red accents in the form of poinsettias in pots or something like that.
You know, that's a great idea. I like white all year long.
Yeah.
Because I was born without the color gene.
Oh,
I just have a hard time with colors, and if I put white in there, it separates everything, and it kind of goes with everything.
It literally does.
Besides being, you know, versatile, it helps those of us who don't have the color gene.
Yeah, and it's also great for if you do a lot of outdoor entertaining, because as dusk comes upon us, the white really still shows in your garden. So,
and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It is actually, you think, why would white show? But it does.
Yeah, it picks up whatever vestige of light is left and just pops the garden. So, and before we get off the topic of flowers, this is the time of year to continue planting bulbs. We talked about it in October.
You know, I saw that smile coming.
Yeah, and of course, that's my favorite thing in the whole world are flowers that come from bulbs. So if you didn't get any bulbs planted last month, you know, do so this month. And when we use the term bulbs, we also mean other flowering plants that aren't true bulbs but are come from corms or tubers. And so just a brief list would be, you know, daffodils, anything in the daffodil family, Dutch iris, anemones, and my personal favorite are ranunculus, which mm-hmm. is a little corm. And so I'm just going to give a brief description of how to plant ranunculus. They look like dried up kind of fingers that point. You want to plant them with the finger side of that corm pointing down. And you want to plant in November, mid-November is best. You want to prepare your soil really well, just like you're planting, you know, other flowers. So dig it up, cultivate it, add some, you know, compost and fertilizer into the soil. Make sure that it's a really nice, finely cultivated area. They do need to grow in full sun, and they don't like to be planted in the same area. They use, you know, certain nutrients in the garden, and so it's best to rotate them and only plant them in an area once every 3 years. I kind of found that out the hard way. I love them, and so I was planting them all over the garden, and then they wouldn't look so great, you know, the second year. So now what I do is I plan them in one particular bed, and then the next year I move them to a different bed, and so on.
I didn't know that.
I know. How about that?
They'll
bloom, but the blooms are smaller, and they're not as
spectacular,
plentiful, and spectacular. Exactly. They don't like soggy soil. So if you have super heavy clay soil, I like to actually plant them in six packs and let them sprout in the six pack, and then I transplant them out after they've sprouted. Because if we get a lot of rain or your soil is soggy, that corm will actually rot before it gets a chance to grow. So one of the things I've done, because it's actually super easy too, is to go ahead and plant them in six packs. And then that gives me a little more time to dig up the soil and get it ready to plant the plants. I like to plant them in kind of drifts. You know, when we've talked in previous shows about garden design concepts, a lot of flowers look better if you plant them in drifts. So I
could you explain what a drift is?
Sure.
I can see your hand movement.
I know, but it isn't TV. I always forget. yeah, a drift means don't plant it in just a straight line in your bed, or just, you know, one row of them along the edge. The ranunculus do get somewhat tall, you know, maybe 18 inches tall when they're blooming. So they're good for the middle to, you know, towards the back of your bed. And so if you think of a drift, like preparing your soil in your bed and then actually kind of taking, you know, a handful of the corms and just tossing them and see where they fall. And you want them to be about 8 to 10 inches apart. But
kind of like a wave.
Kind of like a wave, so that it undulates. And maybe in one section of the drift, there may be four plants deep, you know, 8 inches apart. But maybe it will, you know, decrease to one or two plants at another part in the garden.
So you're saying basically not, we don't want squares or rectangles. That's kind of boring.
You actually can. I mean, one thing I find that works is planting in like a diamond shape.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it in a diamond shape using four to six of the corms, your eye doesn't register it as a specific square. It just looks like kind of a clump or a drift. So, and then I also like to repeat. So, you know, do an area that's maybe 2 feet by 3 feet. And then, you know, skip a space and maybe do another area that's, you know, 2 feet by 2 feet or 2 feet by 3 feet. And that's one of the reasons I like to do a lot of perennials, because I plant, you know, say the Shasta daisies in an area, but on either side of the Shasta daisies, I'll plant my ranunculus. And then you have this repetitive but connected swath of color. So just some thoughts. But you can also do them in pots. They love pots, and one of the things I like to do in pots, because they're not going to bloom for several months, is I like to fill the pot, maybe a six-pack, get a pot that's big enough, you know, like a 14-inch pot, get a six-pack of pansies and plant that in the pot, and then in between the pansies, put a ranunculus corm, right? And then you'll enjoy the pansies and the ranunculus will come up in between the pansies, and then a couple months from now, you'll have both pansies and these brilliant colored ranunculus blooming.
Tina thinks ahead, and it's really neat to see what she does, because you have pleasure now, and then this other thing is popping up, and you could see it growing while you have these other beautiful plants at the same time. And by the time the other one's kind of done, you have a whole new plant in the same container.
It's
very synergistic.
It's basically because I'm lazy and I don't want to repot the pots every month. So it's the lazy man's gardening. One last thing I'll mention about the ranunculus is they are attractive to snails and birds who will come and peck at the new sprouts. So put out snail bait, and then I actually lay chicken wire over the newly sprouting corms, so until they get to be 4 to 6 inches high, and then they're too big for the birds to bother. But I just make a little tent, out of chicken wire, and lay it across where I've planted the bulbs, so that they can't get
protect
eaten.
The babies.
Yeah. So plant your bulbs. That was a little tutorial on ranunculus, because they're my favorite, and you'll have a beautiful flower garden all winter long. Oh, snapdragons. I think I forgot to mention snapdragons. Another one to plant this time of year.
And they're such a wonderful surprise, because sometimes you plant them and you forget about them. And then when life is hectic and you don't have time to plant, here all this beautiful kind of unique kind of stuff starts coming up. And you're like, oh, I did that.
Well, it's the best, especially because the daffodils and the Dutch iris and sometimes the anemone. Oh, and freesias. I forgot to mention freesias. They'll come back for years. After 3 or 4 years, you should dig them up and divide them, because the bulbs get smaller and smaller. So they want you to divide them. But, I'll forget that I have Dutch iris under the lemon tree. And lo and behold, these beautiful blue blooms will, happen in February. And I'm just so excited to see the blue iris, underneath the or next to the lemon tree. It's just super good surprise. Yeah. Every year I get surprised. short memory.
I agree with you, because you forget that it's there. You don't really forget, but
right.
You kind of, it's out of your mind, it's there. And then when it pops up, I love it, especially when it pops up when I'm super busy and I don't have time to garden. And it's there. And it's like, oh, happy spring.
Exactly. And that's one reason why I love bulbs, is because they give you a lot of bang for the buck. They're the gift that keeps on giving, year after year.
In your experience, what bulbs tend to, once they start blooming, instead they start producing, last the longest?
I would say probably the freesias give you the most blooms over the longest period of time. So I love those, and they're heavily scented.
I love the smell.
Yeah, so that's a great one. I pick those and bring them in the house all the time. And I love the daffodils, but you only get, depending on the variety of daffodils, you may only get one bloom per bulb, or some of them will give you, several blooms per bulb. But the daffodil bloom only lasts a couple of weeks, so that's why I usually pick early daffodils, mid-season daffodils, and late daffodils, because different daffodils are pre-programmed to bloom, at different times. So they bloom from probably February to May in our climate, depending on which ones. I like to have a variety of them. And I would say the ranunculus go fairly long, but it also depends on, the heat and the conditions that we have. So if it gets hot, they don't like hot weather. But down at the flower fields where they grow them commercially in Carlsbad, they start blooming in February, and, I think they're finished in May.
If you like ranunculus and you've never been down there, that's a wonderful little field trip to take.
Oh, it's the best field trip for gardeners. Yeah, it's awesome. And it's by the ocean, so it's a very moderate climate, which is why they may get a longer bloom than you or I would.
It's just acres and acres and acres.
Oh, literally.
Just incredible.
So
if you're into
ranunculus,
if you're into that, make a day of it. Go have lunch. Go look at it. They do charge a fee to go in there, but it's
by the outlet mall. So It used to be free. Do they charge for it now?
They charge for it now.
Yeah. In any event, it's pretty cool. So you can just Google flower fields, and it'll pop up in the spring, and they'll let you know what's blooming, and then you can go shopping also at the Outlet Mall. Or go to Legoland. It's right by Legoland.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, back to plants.
Back to plants. So the last thing I want to talk about flowers before we move on to other things is this is wildflower seed sowing time.
Yes.
So if you like California poppies or our native lupins or other native wildflowers, this is the time to sow them before the rains come because the rains will then make them germinate. So the way to sow them is you want to clear a spot and rough up the soil. So you don't necessarily need to, you know, dig big flower beds like you do for our other flowering annuals. But like I have a section along the side of my house. I just go out with a hoe and a rake and I just rough up that soil. In between, I have some, you know, clumps of native plants out there. Just rough up that soil. I like to mix the wildflower seeds with sand or a potting soil mix. And the reason I do that is a lot of the wildflower seeds, especially the poppies, are really small, right? Super
small.
And so it's hard to not throw them in giant clumps where you have, you know, a bunch of seeds all germinating in the same place. So if you mix the seed with some potting mix or some sand, then you're distributing that seed through that potting mix or sand. And then when you take a handful of it and you cast it on the soil, the seeds are going to be spaced farther apart so that when they germinate, you don't have to thin them or they won't be so crowded. And then I like to hand water them when I first sow it to give them a little bit of moisture. And then hopefully we will get some rains. And once the rains come, they'll start, you know, germinating. Or if you irrigate with artificial irrigation, you'll see when they start germinating. And they'll start blooming probably around February-ish, I think, is when I usually see them blooming where I live.
We have a hillside, and one year my husband surprised me and didn't tell me about it, and he threw out poppies seeds on the whole hillside.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it is beautiful. And lupin, and it's just really, I walk down our hill, and all of a sudden I turn, and there's all these poppies and lupin blooming, and it's joyous.
It is joyous. In the community where I live, we sow poppies along the common areas every year.
How many years do they come back for?
You know, they've already started blooming. So as soon as the weather cooled off a bit at night, California poppies are actually a perennial. So if they don't totally dry out, if the plant doesn't totally dry out and die over the summer, it'll start blooming again when the nights kind of turn cool. And in the common areas where we're irrigating, they're getting enough water that the ones that were planted in previous years are blooming already. They started blooming in October.
Wow.
Yeah, just a few. But we always, every year, plant more because eventually, you know, if they don't get irrigated, they'll die out. So I just love it. And then people who come to the community and drive along the main drag just are in awe.
Your house, it's a long drive up to your house. And just seeing poppy after poppy after poppy, it's spectacular. I mean, your landscaping is beautiful, but seeing these poppies it makes everything stand out.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, having a cultivated landscaped garden, you know, you can make it look beautiful. But when you see these wildflowers that are just kind of in a non-landscaped area, in a non-organized fashion, it does touch your soul. It's just like Mother Nature is speaking to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we can all do that in our own, you know, backyards. We often have, you know, slope areas or that parkway area, you know, or an area next to your driveway.
And they're pretty hardy. You know, plants on my hill, the only thing that gets watered is the fruit trees. And so we count on Mother Nature, and I might not have as many. I think he threw out a lot, but I might not have as many. But it's the whole hillside comes alive.
Yeah,
and there's it's only by what nature has given it.
Exactly. And some years, you know, you'll get less, and other years
you get more.
That's what we talk about when we say the super bloom that we had, you know, these last couple years when we had all the rain. We had these beautiful areas that were super bloom, right? That seeds that had lain dormant for years because they didn't get enough water, and entire hillsides were. I think you showed me an aerial picture
yes.
that showed our hillsides. Was it last winter or the winter before? That was that were just...
Last winter.
Was a patchwork quilt of color.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
So create your own in a little tiny way if you can. And now's the time of year to get those seeds sown. So next, since we were talking about natives, let's talk about planting our California-friendly and native plants.
This is the month to do it. We've been telling you, wait. Now we're saying plant.
Exactly.
As long as we don't get any more of those Santa Ana winds.
Oh. Yeah. So the reason we suggest planting them in November is because sometime in November, hopefully, we'll get our winter rains will begin, and they'll continue on through February or March. So by planting your native plants now, they get to take advantage of that natural cycle that they depend on, and they'll get nice and settled in with that native rainfall.
One thing to make sure, though, you need to water them. If you're not getting rain, they're babies. They're not going to be strong enough for a couple years. So if you're not getting rain, you make sure they have some water, because their root system isn't very big.
No, it's not. And because they are meant to serve to begin their growth in moist soil, the other thing to do when you prepare your hole for planting is you want to dig a hole, as for any plant, we recommend digging a hole twice as big as the container of the plant that you're planting, but only just as deep as the container. We don't want you to dig deep holes, because when you do that, then the plants tend to sink. And then they can be sitting in water, and they won't be happy about that. So just plant the plant in a hole that's twice as wide. But before you plant it, what's recommended for native plants is to fill those holes up. Dig them. You're planting, you know, 10 plants, a dozen plants. You or your gardener, dig all those holes and then stop. Then get your hose and fill all those holes up with water and let it soak in. Because then what happens is now that soil around the root ball of that plant is moist. It's not going to be dry. And then, of course, you plant your plant. You don't add a lot of fertilizer to native plants. You can mix in a little of an all-purpose fertilizer if you want, but they're not heavy feeders. They're used to our native soil. So then plant them, and then, as Katrina said, if we don't get rains, you have to be sure and irrigate them, because their roots have not grown deep enough to search out moisture yet.
Yeah, they're not established.
No.
And a lot of people make that mistake, and they kill a lot of native plants because you think, oh, it's a native plant, we don't have to give it water. Well, that might be true a couple years down the line, but they're babies right now.
Right. The other thing that I don't think I mentioned is when you backfill the soil, you're not amending the soil. Often if we're growing other plants, you know, typical European type exotic plants, we actually amend our soil with compost. You don't need to do that with native plants, because if you're choosing the native plants that are appropriate for Orange County, it wants the native soil, so you don't need to amend the soil. But again, repeating what Katrina said, be sure throughout at least that first year, especially next summer when it gets hot, that you make sure that you irrigate those plants so that they don't dry up and die. Poor little things.
I know. Spend the money, time, and energy. You don't want them to pass away on you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take a break real quick and let you know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. Okay, so we've talked about planting new plants in our flower gardens, maybe transitioning some of our gardens to native plants. And now maybe we should talk about veggies. What do you think?
I love veggies. Let's talk about veggies.
Let's talk about veggies. So last month we were encouraging everyone to switch from warm season veggies like tomatoes and peppers and squashes to cool season veggies like lettuce, broccoli, cauliflower, root vegetables, peas, because those are what like to grow in the cool weather. But I don't know about you, Katrina, but I didn't plant any of that last month because it was too hot and windy.
Well, my husband did.
Did he? Good for him. How are they faring?
Actually, I'm surprised, but he's been down there every single day watering. And some of them haven't made it, but if we knew then what we know now, every time there's a Santa Ana, we go, oh, that's the last one. Now we could plant, and then there's another Santa Ana, and it's like, oh, well, that has to be, we've already had two. So they're doing okay, but we're going to be doing some more planting.
Good for you. I wish your husband would come to my house and plant. But yeah, no, I'm going to be planting the first half of November before the holiday stuff gets too crazy. And as I mentioned, I'll be planting, you know, any lettuce, any green leafy thing, lettuce, spinach, kale. You're in my favorite, kale. What kind of kale did you plant this year? Do you know?
Oh, a variety. My favorite's Cosmic.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's a beautiful, it's decorative.
It's very decorative.
Yeah.
It's really pretty.
Yeah.
And I love the taste of it. It's not, it's a little bit softer.
Right.
To the taste to it. It's just softer. But I like mixing them all up.
Yeah. And I love blue curly kale. It's a little bit coarser than the Cosmic, but it just goes forever. And that's why I like it. It will actually end up being a stalk that's, you know, 3-4 feet tall. And I'll plant it in November, and it'll still go probably through the summer. I mean, the one I planted last November finally got eaten by, I think, cabbage moth larvae, because I went away for a week, and when I came back, it was gone. I mean, all the leaves were eaten. But had I been here, it might still be going, because I would have, you know, sprayed for the moth, but or the larva. But yeah, I love the blue curly kale because for me it gives me the longest season of any vegetable. But all of the kales are great.
All the kales are great. What else do you like to plant?
I love to plant the peas. The sugar snap peas are my family's favorite. You know, we eat them raw, we stir fry them, and that's another plant that keeps on producing. I like to plant those, and I think you do too, the peas in succession. So I'll do like a 4-foot row. And I'll wait a few weeks, and then I'll plant another 4-foot row so that you get them.
I like planting most of my vegetables in succession because if you plant it all at one time, you can't eat it all at one time.
True. Who can eat 6 heads of broccoli at once, you know?
Exactly.
So I like to plant the peas from seed, and then I will plant the lettuces and kale from seed sometimes. But if I get a late start like I am this year, I'll probably just get 6-packs and plant them. And then I personally don't grow broccoli and cauliflower from seed. I just like to get the 6-packs of those. Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah. And then any of the root vegetables, you know, beets are great to plant from seed, carrots, radishes.
If you never had a homegrown beet, you have to grow beets. I always thought beets were like the canned beets in the store. And, oh my goodness, I think there's just two different...
Like two different species.
Yes. And they're easy to grow, too.
Super easy. And you can eat the beet greens. Which
beet greens are great for you.
Which is one of the things I love planting them from seed, because you pull you thin your row of beets and you eat the greens, and then, you know, you want to have 2-3 inches of space between each beet plant so that it can grow to a nice 2-inch big beet, you know, eventually. But in the meantime, you know, pick those beet greens in between the plants that you want to keep, and you have salad fixings.
And excellent salad fixings.
Exactly. And is there anything else you like to plant that I didn't mention, Katrina?
You know, I just go to the, sometimes I go to the nursery and see what I could find. One year we did kohlrabi. That was fun.
Yeah.
You know, just sometimes experiment. It depends on how much room you have. You know, I always make sure there's room for my favorites, and then something else pops up. Well, why not grow it and try it?
Right. A couple of other edibles that are great to plant this time of year are onions and strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
In the first part of November, both of those are great to get in the ground. Now, for the onions, you want to plant what are called short day onions from seed. And what that means is that they grow and form their bulbs during the winter when we have daylight that is short, right? We don't have long days, we have short days, so that's why they're called short day onions. So in the latitude where we live, onions are grown in the winter. You want short day onions. If you try to grow them in the summer, it's fine, but they won't form the bulbs. It has to do with where the sun is in your latitude. So we're in the latitude where we choose short day onions and we plant the seeds in November. Or Katrina and I cheat, and we order the starts, which are basically like tiny green onions, and they ship them to us. I can't remember the name of the company, but they're out of Texas, right? Dixondale. That's what
Dixondale.
It is. Yeah, good. See, two brains are better than one. Dixondale is where we order them from, and you basically get a bunch of green onions of several varieties, if you choose to have several varieties, and you just prepare your soil, and then I just use a pencil, and I just poke a hole in the ground and drop one of these little green onions into each hole, and then lo and behold, in what, March, April?
Well, yes, it depends on which one, and then they also last for different periods of time.
They do, yeah.
And you could also get leaks from them.
Okay.
But make sure they have, like Tina was saying, they have long day, what is it, long, medium, and short day.
Uh-huh.
And we don't, some of the ones that are in long day, I really want, but I'm not in Montana.
Right.
So my husband tried to grow roses in the shade for me for years. It didn't work. It's the same concept. You don't
follow the rules.
Be happy with what you have. And there's some wonderful short day onions. And some of them last, you know, several months after you pick them. You know, you dry them out and...
And they store well.
They store well.
But they'll tell you in the descriptions which ones store well.
Yeah, right in the description they'll say you have 30 days or you have 90 days or whatever it might be. And I also find out if I air them out, I tend to braid mine and then hang them on the wall.
Oh, how cool.
I love braiding mine.
Yeah.
I just braid them and then whenever I need one, I go cut one off.
Yeah.
And,
oh, what a great idea.
Oh, it's fun. It's decorative. Yeah. People make comments like, where'd you get that? And I go, oh, I did that.
Yeah. What a cool idea.
And it's in the kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
It's
in the kitchen. Hang it in the kitchen, yeah.
I hang them in the kitchen. And,
yeah.
So I tend to like the ones that last, you know, the 90-day longer ones.
Right.
Because, and they're like Texas yellows, I'm not sure, but they're a good yellow onion. And it's fun growing them and, you know, and braiding them or, you know, some people put them in nets or stockings,
right.
You know?
Right.
And whatever you want to do or just grow a few and just put them in a basket. Whatever you want to do, but I love that because it's so much fun.
Yeah, so this month, if you were going to grow onions, you would get the short day seeds, but if you want to order the starts, as Katrina and I do, you wait and place that order, I think the end of December, January?
Well, you could place, I've just placed my order in
but it
October.
Won't be delivered until
right.
January.
And I made a mistake saying, oh, ship it to me now, and they called me back and said, what's your zip, you know, email me back with your zip code. You really don't want to get it until January.
Till January. So
I was kind of excited. I was going to try to cheat it.
But
they know better than I do. They do this for a living.
Right, right.
And so I'll be getting it in the first week in January, and I'll have my little starts ready to go.
Yay. So and do then, onions if you've never done them before.
And another thing I like, if you don't have a lot of room, you plant your lettuces right now, whatever you want to do, and then in January, you could take some of that space.
Good
and
idea.
Use it for onions.
Yeah. Or we have some other Master Gardener friends who do their onions in actually in the Home Depot buckets,
mm-hmm.
and they just poke holes in the bottom, and you can get a couple dozen onions in a Home Depot bucket.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's lots of strategies. Onions will grow great in containers or in your vegetable beds. So you don't
actually have to have a garden.
No. So try onions. The other thing to plant this time of year is you can order strawberry plants and bare root, and they will be pre-chilled. And then when you put them in your beds in November, And of course, you know, our soil is still fairly warm and we get fairly warm days. Strawberries actually like cooler weather anyway, but because you have bought them pre-chilled, when you put them in the ground, they're like, hooray, it's spring, and they'll immediately, you know, start putting out a lot of growth and blossoms. And so starting in January, February, you actually get fruit. So
wonderful.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
Nothing like a fresh vegetables and fresh fruit.
Yeah.
You
know,
you get to go pick, and kids love it too. If you have a little one.
Oh my gosh. Strawberries? Are you kidding? Yeah.
That could be their strawberry. And tell them about the pots that you put them in, the strawberry pots.
Yeah. Strawberries are great in pots because they like good drainage. So they actually prefer to be kind of a little elevated. That's why in the commercial fields you see them growing on those, you know, little kind of flat hilltops, mounds. Yeah. And so they're great for pots, but one pot in particular was designed for strawberries, called a strawberry pot, crazily enough. And it's a pot that has, everybody's probably seen them, they have these little holes in the side going around the pot at different levels. And you fill the pot with potting mix up to the first level of holes, then you put one strawberry plant through the inside of the pot, and you lay the root ball on the soil, and then you gently pull the leaves out of that hole on the side of the pot.
Now, pay attention to that, because I've seen people try to stuff them in the other way.
From the outside in?
From the outside in?
No.
No.
Because the poor little root ball is going to get all destroyed. And so, yeah, so better to partially fill with soil only up to the first layer of holes, and then put the pot in through the center of the pot and gently tease the leaves out of the hole and let the root ball lay on top of the soil. And then fill another bit of soil in there until you get to the next row of holes and do the same thing until you've reached the top. And then you can plant a plant in the very top opening of the pot.
And they're beautiful.
They're so pretty.
They're so pretty because it's like having this big vase of flowers coming from all different sides. I mean, it's a pretty plant, and with the red coming off of there and watching it grow and then the buds coming out, it's really pretty.
It is. It's beautiful. Pretty enough that you can have, you know, two on either side of your front door, and that can be your potted plant that you have by your front door, assuming it gets sun. Strawberries and all edibles need a good 6 hours of sun a day. Lettuce can maybe get away with 4 hours of sun, but in general, veggies need a lot of sun. And then the last thing I want to talk about for edibles is our peach trees, which seems like a silly time of year to talk about peach trees because they're done giving fruit. It's not time to prune them yet. But if you have a peach tree, you may have experienced a fungal disease called peach leaf curl. And if you don't want to have peach leaf curl, then November is the time to do the first spray for peach leaf curl. And what you want to spray on them is an organic lime sulfur spray. And you do it 3 times a year, and you start in November. And then you do it again the end of December, January-ish. And then you do it a final time right before the buds start to break. So they're eventually going to have those flower buds that, of course, turn into peaches. And you want to spray just when you see the buds starting to get a little fat. Mm-hmm. So depending on the weather and the variety of peach tree you chose to plant, that might be in March-ish. That you would spray that final time. So by doing that, you're basically, the lime sulfur inhibits that fungal growth. So it works. I've done it. And sometimes I only manage to get 2 sprays in, which is better than none. And if you can get all 3 in, then you'll start to suppress that fungal disease, especially now that I've done it for a few years in a row. It's really, really a lot less problematic on my peach tree.
You're good.
Anything else, Katrina, that you can think of from the edible garden standpoint?
You know, I just think people should go and explore. If there's something you haven't tried, do it. Have fun with your vegetables. I personally like winter vegetables, except for tomatoes. Winter vegetables are my favorite.
Me too.
And it's just, they're just wonderful.
Well, and I like being out in the garden better in the winter because it's not so hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much all I need to say about the winter veggies. So, should we talk for a minute about our lawns? Because some of us still have lawns.
Yes, a lot of us still have lawns.
Yeah, and I know there was a big movement to, you know, remove and replace your lawn, which is good if you you know, were able to plant a California friendly, habitat friendly kind of garden. But for some of us who use our lawns for entertaining or have kids or grandkids.
Or animals.
I have no lawn in my front yard, but I still have a chunk in my backyard, and I think you do too.
I have a chunk in my front yard and my side yard, but now below is all gone now. But I love my lawn.
Yeah, and I use mine in the backyard. It's big enough to put, you know, 3 round tables out, so it's great for hosting, you know, baby showers or wedding showers or,
exactly,
you know, a ladies' lunch or, you know, whatever you're going to host, a summer barbecue. So what we should do with our lawns this time of year is, well, first of all, you need to know whether you have a cool season lawn or a warm season lawn.
And how does one tell that, Tina?
Well, you can take a little chunk of it to a good nursery, and they will be able to identify for you what kind of lawn you have. So if you have St. Augustine as an example, that's kind of a super coarse kind of grass, but that's a warm season lawn. It's hardy, it loves heat, and it grows great during the warm season months. And then it goes a little bit dormant in the cooler season. So if you have a warm season lawn, you don't want to fertilize it, you know, from now on throughout the winter because it's going a bit dormant. And the rule with fertilizer for any plant is you give plants fertilizer when they're actively growing. However, if you have a cool season lawn like I do, I have a tall fescue, and those slow down. They don't like hot weather, so I don't fertilize my lawn at all during the summer, but I started giving it some fertilizer last month in October. So if you have a cool season lawn, now would be the time to feed it if you haven't given it a little food.
And it's also time to start thinking about planting if you're planting a cool
season. Yes, good point. If you're planting a cool season lawn, you wouldn't want to plant it in August. You would want to wait till now to plant a cool season lawn, either from seed. I mean, you can kind of plant sod any time of year, but trying to plant cool season sod in the summer is a little problematic because it's not going to really be very happy in the heat.
And it's the same thing as we're talking about with the drought tolerant. It needs to be watered.
Right.
Okay, and I like planting it in the wintertime, and if the rains come enough, but right now the rains aren't coming enough, so you need to make sure those little seeds don't dry out.
Right, exactly.
So nurture your lawn if you're planting. This or reseeding. We're going to be doing some reseeding.
There you go.
We have some heavy traffic areas in our cool season lawn. And
yeah.
We have a couple dogs, you know, older dogs that don't go down the hill anymore to go piddle.
Uh-huh.
And so they've made their mark on my grass.
Yes.
And I have areas of dead grass. So now it's like as soon as the weather is cooling off a bit, and I hope no more Santa Anas, we'll be reseeding part of our yard.
Yeah, and a great time of year to do that. Also, if you have a cool season lawn that is older and has a lot of thatch buildup, and it looks like it has a real dense root mat. You know, you can kind of see from the side along the edge. You can see that there's green grass, but below the green grass there might be, you know, 2 inches of this, you know, dense kind of brownish material, and that's called thatch, and it's what builds up over time in an older lawn. And there are machines that you can rent that will dethatch your lawn, and it basically has kind of a wheel that blades that kind of cut through and pull out some of that, you know, matted up brown material, and that's healthier for your lawn because then it allows air and water to penetrate to the roots more easily. The thatch can basically almost be a root or a water barrier, you know, that it, the water has trouble soaking through that thatch to get down to the roots. So that's a good thing to do.
You know what, Tina? We have about, six or seven, 8 minutes left.
Okay.
You know what I'd like to talk about,
sure,
that you're so good at, is preparing for Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay.
What can we do to make our house look festive?
Sure. Oh, this is so fun. There's so many things. We talked a little bit about preparing your front entryway by purchasing, you know, potted chrysanthemums and other plants, blooming plants that have the right color. You can just buy them in pots. You know, you can see all over the place there's, you know, 8-inch chrysanthemums, right, at every grocery store and hardware store and nursery. And what I like to do is to just drop those, you know, plastic pots into maybe baskets, you know, because the baskety look is really says Thanksgiving, right? Another thing that I like to do is I like to create potted arrangements using that thriller, filler, spiller kind of philosophy. And so you can take a pot that maybe you have colorful flowers in at other times of the year and create a fall-looking pot. And so for the thriller, I love to get a grass, you know, a beautiful kind of long, tall grass, perhaps a purple one or one that has some wispy seed heads on the top. And that's my thriller. I put that in the, you know, center of the pot, say, or towards the back of the pot. And then for spiller, you can use, alyssum, for instance, or a succulent type of sedum, you know, that may spill over the edges. And then for the filler, just choose anything that has those beautiful orange and yellow colors, maybe pansies, some, you know, smaller chrysanthemums, some calendula, you know, even marigolds, even though they're not going to last but for another month or so because of the cool weather coming. If you're building this pot arrangement to be the centerpiece of your decoration on your doorstep or decoration on an outdoor patio table, just choose whatever looks wonderful and has the right colors for the season.
Right, and then also take all three of them, try to buy them at the same time so the colors, you could compare the colors and how they stack together. And you could arrange them in the store.
Absolutely. Yourself. That's one of my favorite things to do is, you know, you get a cart or a little wagon at the nursery and you just try arranging them right in the cart until you get a combination that you really like. And that's the combination that you take home and plant yourself. So that's a fun thing to do. Another fun thing to do that doesn't last as long, but if you buy pumpkins and you scoop and hollow out the pumpkin and fill that with potting soil, you can put these planted arrangements right in the pumpkin. Now, they don't last very long because the pumpkin, you know, shell will start to rot after a few weeks, but it sure does look super cute, you know, for your Thanksgiving holiday.
And if you want something to last a little bit longer, you could also get a whole pumpkin and just put some succulents at the top.
Exactly right.
You know, and it will last a lot longer. So it depends on how long you want it to last. You might not want it lasting into Christmas time. But if you're early October, you could do that with the peat moss, put peat moss around it and a glue gun and just buy this little pumpkin and stick some succulents on it. It's really easy to do, and you can Google it. I mean, people are doing it all over the place.
Yes, my garden club does it every year, and the way we do it is we buy any pumpkin, whether they're the, you know, fancy Cinderella pumpkins or just the plain old orange pumpkin, and we spray the top with spray glue. We put that moss, just smush it down on the top of the pumpkin on the spray glue. Go out in your garden or neighbor's gardens and take a lot of cuttings of succulents. And then we just do a little glue gun on the edge of the succulent and poke it in the moss until you have a nice full arrangement. And I have had those arrangements last outside, not inside, but outside, until February or March.
Yes.
And then finally the pumpkin starts to give way. And then I've dug a hole or gotten a pot and just dumped the whole, you know, kind of rotting pumpkin into that hole, and the succulents just grow in place in the ground or in a pot.
So how fun.
It's you get a lot of bang for your buck if you do that as a decoration for Thanksgiving.
And then if you're looking for a hostess gift, they're really easy to do, and people don't think about it, And you could even do those little small Cinderella pumpkins, or you could do a larger pumpkin, and as a present to somebody.
It's a great idea.
And it doesn't take very long to do it.
No, it's fun. The other one, real quick, I know we don't have much time, but the other hostess gift that I love to do at the holidays or do as a centerpiece is make an herb basket with living herbs. And you take a basket of any size, you line it with plastic, fill it with potting soil, and plant your favorite herbs in there. And then what I like to do for a hostess gift is copy out one of my favorite recipes. Like, I have a great dill dip recipe, and then I plant the herbs, the parsley, the dill, and the green onions or chives in this little basket. And then I get a chopstick, and I do punch two holes in a recipe card, and I write out the recipe for the dill dip, thread it over the chopstick, and then give that as a hostess gift. Tie a bow to it, and it's like, here is a recipe for dill dip and the herbs that you need to make the dill dip with.
That's
so
sweet.
Yeah, and so that's another way to have a fun hostess gift if you're going to someone else's house.
There's a lot of easy and fun things out there. Now, there's one last thing I'd like to talk about, and it's not for Thanksgiving.
What's that?
It's for perhaps Christmas. There's a bulb that you like to plant.
Oh, there's two, actually.
Two, actually, you like
yeah.
to plant. So
yeah,
we got like 3 minutes to
okay.
talk about this.
I'm glad you remembered that. This is also the time, if you back up from whatever date the holiday is that you celebrate, whether it's Hanukkah or Christmas or New Year's, if you back up 6 weeks from that date, this is when you want to plant bulbs in containers to force them to bloom at Christmas or Hanukkah or New Year's or whatever holiday you like to celebrate. And so doing the math, so for a Christmas bloom, I like to plant amaryllis. They come in red, white, and also variegated red and white blooms. The amaryllis are a spectacular flower.
They're beautiful. They're huge, gorgeous. They make a statement.
Oh my gosh, they are too stunning for words. The flowers themselves are 5 to 6 inches across, and you get 4 of them on one stem. So you can imagine how beautiful that is. And each bulb will produce at least one stem with 4 flowers, and some of the bulbs will produce 2 stems, each with 4 flowers on them. And so you order these bulbs. If you want a Christmas bloom, then you're going to plant them probably the second week in November. And if you want a New Year's bloom, you know, it would be planted a little bit later. And they're super easy to plant. You just fill a pot with potting soil, make sure it has a drainage hole, put the bulb in. You only cover the bulb halfway. You leave half of it to two-thirds of it actually sticking out of the soil. Put it in a sunny window or a window that has bright light. Keep it watered, not soggy, but just moist. And in a few weeks, you'll see these stems and leaves start coming out. And then in 6 weeks, it'll be blooming.
Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely simple to do.
Now, the other bulb that I like to do are paper whites. You see a lot of paper whites in pots for sale around the holidays. You can do them yourself. You buy the bulbs. The process is very similar to the amaryllis, but you can also grow these just in pebbles, and you don't have to use soil. I kind of like to do a clear glass container, and in this case, it doesn't need a drainage hole, and then you can get those beautiful colored pebbles or glass beads, and you put the bulbs almost touching each other. You just leave a little bit of space in between. Fill it with water. That's why you need to see the clear glass, because the water can just barely touch the bottom of the bulb. You don't want it drowning in water. And then that will start showing you some growth, and you'll get some beautiful paper white, which is a variety of narcissus or daffodil. So some great ideas for the holidays.
Oh, with that, that's the end of our show today.
Well, thanks, Katrina. Always fun.
Thank you, Tina. Until next month.